So you're listening live to the pilot episode of Armand and Akil's show, bringing you interviews with local activists, politicians, and policy experts from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. I'm Armand Rana.
And I'm Akil Krishnan. It's Saturday, the 28th of January at 5.09 p.m. We're broadcasting live from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkmiam-speaking Musqueam people.
So, cool. Now, do you want to tell people what this cool new show is about with your mic on so people can hear you?
Once more. For sure, man. Well, we're readers and avid talkers, and I think a natural next step is to do this on the air. So, we'll be talking to interesting people about interesting things.
Yeah, that's great. At least stuff we find interesting. I don't know if most normal people find these topics interesting, but like today's show, for example, we have a friend whose name is Michael, and he was super,
Michael!
Yeah, he's a mutual friend of ours, and he was super excited about this unionization effort called Organize UBC for the graduate students here. And given this guy, when we first met him, he was kind of into Ayn Rand and that kind of stuff. I was really curious about this this unionization effort. And
So today we'll be talking to Gracie Buchholz, the deputy president of COOP 227A here at UBC. She's a master's student at UBC studying botany. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Yeah, thank you.
So could you start by telling us a bit more about yourself and COOP 27A? Is it COOPy or COOP or what?
Yeah, it's like the Mayo COOPy.
COOPy.
I definitely didn't know that when I first read it though. But yeah, we call it COOPy.
COOPy, cool. So yeah, tell us about yourself and what's COOPy 278?
Yeah, so as said, my name is Gracie. I study botany at the University of British Columbia. I did my undergrad here, and then when I started my graduate degree, part of the way that I paid for that is TAing. So I've been working as a teaching assistant for the last year and a half or so. And one of the things that you learn when you become a TA is that you're part of this local union, QP2278, and a part of that is going through an orientation process. And so right before I started teaching, I was given an orientation by Phyllis Pearson, who was the president before our current president, Emily Cadger. And she kind of ended the orientation after talking about what it means to be in a union and all the benefits that come from it with saying, hey, we're really interested in organizing other student positions. So research assistants, academic assistants, graduate assistants. And I was kind of interested in that. And so I talked to her more about it. And she was, when I asked her about how tuition works and how tuition works in terms of wages, she was like, we have no bargaining power right now in terms of that because we don't represent the other students on campus. We only represent the TAs. And so that's really what this drive is about. And that immediately sparked my interest. I was like, okay, I would love to work on this. So for the first few months, it was kind of us just meeting with a few other students on campus, kind of talking about like what this would look like. And then this summer, we got support from the national union. So we're the local 2278, but the national QP branch or group. And and so with their support, we were really able to like put a ton of resources and like people on the ground into this.
Yeah, so I want to get into more detail actually of your motivations for joining QP2278 in a minute. But just coming back, you know, you're a graduate student. What excites you about your job as a graduate student? Why do you want to be a graduate student?
Yeah, I have always loved research. So I was really fortunate and I took a course in my high school where I was able to get some like wet lab experience in high school. And it was really my favorite course. And so when it came time for me to apply to universities, I knew that was kind of the space that I wanted to enter. And then in my second year, I started working in a lab in the summer and loved it. It was kind of everything I expected. And so when I came time, when I was done with my degree, I had graduated, COVID had just happened and I had still been in the lab a little bit, but I felt like I wasn't really done with UBC. Like I didn't get to really engage with student culture as much as I had wanted to. And I felt like I wasn't really done with lab work. Although as I'm coming to the end of my graduate degree, I'm like definitely would love a little bit of a break. Not that I don't love it, but I don't have that same like need to continue on. And so I ended up finding somebody who I really connected with. My supervisor's name is Jeanette Witten, and kind of immediately in our first call, we really got along and had some of the similar ideas about like what it means to be a graduate student and to be a researcher. And so it's been great to work with her. I study evolutionary botany and early populations of plants. So
That's super cool. So yeah, so you mentioned earlier, so it was organized UBC, like this drive to, was that the main motivation for joining QP2278 for you?
Yeah, I guess in terms of organizing, I've always been interested in, I guess I would say broadly, like how things work. Like, you join UBC, it's this massive organization, and there's so many moving parts. And I was always kind of like, well, you know, how is tuition decided? Why is housing going up? There were these questions that I kind of had broadly, and joining QP2278 meant that not only was I able to talk to people who had those answers, but it kind of lets you just learn a little bit more about like how these sorts of structures work. And so I guess, you know, the organizing drive was definitely what first got me in. And as I've continued on, like that kind of, I guess, greater motivation to just like learn about how things work has definitely kind of kept me in it.
So I've got a silly question here. What does the number mean? You know, you do mention what QP, QP2278. And so there are different numbers for different QPs attached. So how do they relate to each other? And is it just an identifier? So how would you relate to another QP?
That's a great question. I have no idea actually why we're 2278 specifically. But the way that it works is there is the QP National Branch. And so there are it's Canadian University of Public Employees. So it's like the largest union in the nation. And then that, overhead, like National Branch will have branches per province. So there's going to be like QPBC. And then we are like a further division of that. And so the other QPs on campus, Emily does this more than I do, but she'll meet with the other heads of the locals there and they'll talk about what's going on. The way that unions are really, the cohesion between them is the workers. And so, you know, we represent TAs and other QP branches represent like lab techs and stuff like that. So it's just about a different job position, but we are all part of like the greater QP ecosystem, I would say.
All right.
So how did you mentioned in the bio that you sent us that you started off from being, you know, a department representative and then you went on to being now the deputy president. What was it like being the department representative and what was that transition like becoming deputy president now?
Yeah, it was great. So the department rep basically meant that I was going to my local like graduate student group. So we have the BGSA, Botany Grad Student Association, and I would go to those monthly meetings and kind of just update them on like what's been going on with the union. That was also a space where if people were having issues in their TA position, they could come and talk to me about that. So people knew that I was like the point person in the department. And it didn't mean that I necessarily had all the answers on how to help them, but I at least had the contacts of where to send them to get some help if things were going astray. So and then I was also going to monthly union meetings, so it was kind of like a you're the person going to the union and you're the person going to the BGSA on the union's behalf.
Could you clarify again what is the BGSA?
The Botany Graduate Student Association. Sorry, okay. I know acronyms are I was going to the Botany Grad Student Association meetings and then the union meetings. And you know, we are pretty lucky in Botany so far. Like I haven't had any major issues, so I didn't have too much to report on, but the union meetings were a time for other department reps to meet up and kind of it was, you know, if you're having an issue in your department, sometimes it can feel like you're dealing with that alone, but when you come to the meetings, maybe someone else has had the same problem and we could all kind of talk about that and strategize. So I was pretty regularly coming to those. I was having these organizing meetings also about once a month, but at that time it was just like a few students on campus, so we didn't really like have the same like oomph and drive we have now. We held elections in November, and at the time the current president, Phyllis, just basically asked me, she was like, you've been coming to these meetings, you seem really engaged, like would you like to run for vice president? And I said, yeah, sure. And at the time Emily Kadger, who's now the president, was the VP, so she just moved up to president, I moved to VP, and we tend to work in tandem on these things. It's been great so far.
Yeah, that's super cool. So yeah, thanks so much. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to CITR News not CITR News, it's the Armand and Akil show now on CITR 101.9 FM. We are speaking to Gracie, Deputy President of QP2278, the union representing teaching assistants and other graduate workers here at...
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. here at UBC. After the break, we'll be talking to her more about their most recent campaign, Organize UBC. Stay tuned right after this ad break.
You know what I could go for right now? Authentic flour tortillas pan-fried until golden brown.
Yum!
Or vegan taco kits filled with traditional Mexican chilies and spices.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Or how about vegan potato and chorizo taquitos?
How can I get these foods immediately?
Buy Lita's Mexican Foods.
Sounds delicious. Tell me more.
Lita's Mexican Foods is a female-managed, plant-based Mexican food innovator in BC. Their products come prepackaged and frozen at tons of local grocery stores around Metro Vancouver. Not to mention they can be cooked in under 10 minutes.
Wow, that sounds perfect for me. I've been so busy lately and dinner takes so long to make. Where can I get my hands on some Lita's Mexican Foods?
Lots of places. Whole Foods, Choices, Stong's, Vegan Supply, Donald's, and even UBC Bookstore. Hey, where are you going?
To buy some Lita's Mexican Foods. See you later.
See ya.
Throughout the history of music, the most happiest chords have been in constant church by composers and musicians. Music reflects the emotions of human beings, and the pursuit for well-being is seen also in the arts of music. With today's modern technology, it's easy to separate different frequencies, which causes the feelings of happiness or the feelings of sorrow.
Fridays from 2 to 3:30 p.m., it's the Beppe Crespin Presents radio show.
It's CITR's 24 hours of radio art in a snack-sized format.
Difficult music, harsh electronics, dark ambient, drones, spoken word, cut-up collage, and general Crespin weirdness.
Beppe Crespin Presents, Fridays at 2 p.m. on CITR FM 101.9.
Streaming at player.citr.ca.
And we're back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to CITR News 101.9 FM. On CITR 101.9 FM, we're talking to Gracie Buchholz, Deputy President of QP 2278, representing education workers here on campus.
So Gracie, what is Organize UBC and how did it get started?
Yeah, so it really came out of a request from students. So, you know, we represent the TAs. We also represent the English language workers and the markers recently that was added to our union. But over COVID, a lot of TAs were kind of taking on more than they expected. They often also hold this position of like research assistant or academic assistant or graduate assistant. And also there were new positions added that were academic assistant, that were the equivalent of TA positions that were not paid the TA wage, because they weren't in the union and they weren't TAs, but they were doing the work of that. And so people in these other roles basically asked us like, hey, can you help us out? We've got these low wages. You know, maybe you run into some sort of issue with your supervisor where they're asking you to work more hours than you had expected. And we would look into their job position and we would say, oh, you're not actually in QP 2278, so we can't help you with this. Like, we're so sorry. And this was basically happening enough and there were enough new positions being formed and then enough issues with the research assistants that we thought, okay, this is probably time to see if we can get these students involved in our union as well. And so it came out of requests from the students. And then it began basically as like a few of us meeting each week to kind of be like, what would this, you know, look like? We realized the first thing we need to do is like know how many people are in these roles, like how many students are there, where which departments are they located? Once we kind of, things fell off a little bit in the summer just because everybody was traveling, I was in the field and stuff like that. And then we ended up getting support from, the QP Nationals. So they were able to create a budget and give us money to hire more organizers, hire people who can kind of do that mapping, hire people who can talk to the different groups. And what we've kind of developed over time is this strategy we called the unit committees. So we have smaller groups in each department of people who know the people in that department. We kind of assume that people are going to know the ones they know the best and they're going to be able to organize there easily. And so we were able to hire more people to form up those groups. And that's been really successful so far.
Cool. So how does one join the you know, organizing? So organize UBC here. Is it automatic when you become a part, when you join your union, that you can, you can automatically just join or
become an organizer or
with Organize UBC? Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we have a few different places that people can work. So if you want to join as a volunteer, we definitely have space and time for people to do that. Often we're running events in terms of whatever the unit committees need. So we'll have groups like the Earth and Ocean Science people say, hey, we want to hold an info session at 9 a.m. We want to catch people as they're coming into work. Can you guys bring coffee? Can you have someone from the union there? So we'll help out there. Volunteers can help out in that way. We've also started something called Direct Snaction, which is where we have a cart that has snacks, coffee, and some union material. And we just go around to different buildings and try to catch people and say, hey, do you have a few seconds to chat with us? And so volunteers are always welcome to help there. We also have people who are hired organizers. So we call them member organizers. That's definitely something, if you're interested in that, you can get in contact with us on the website. If people are just, interested in casually being involved, we definitely always need volunteers to help out with events or just spread the word. The other thing that we are definitely looking for is, people in departments we haven't reached yet. So groups like medicine, the medicine school, School of Medicine, the land and food systems, SOTR, these are groups where we don't know as many people, just because a lot of this is by word of mouth. And so we're always looking for people in those lower underrepresented groups.
Yeah, I don't think it's super surprising that SOD would be underrepresented in the unionization effort.
Yeah, part of it is that this really got started, but who do you know? So I knew a lot of people in life sciences, and so I was able to quickly organize my department as well as the fisheries. And none of us have connections to SOTR. And so I don't know. I'm curious. I would love to start organizing there. If people have contacts, please email me. I'm curious. I've done the orientations there before, and I felt that I think people definitely think it's going to be very hostile, and I didn't get that impression. People seemed interested in the union, what it meant to be there. I'm very curious about that group. It's become a bit of an itch that I have where I'm like, what is going on in SOTR?
So can you tell me a little bit more about what the current drive is? So when you go to your website, when you go to Organize UBC, you see sign a card.
Mm-hmm.
What is that all about?
Yeah. Okay. So the unionization process has changed in our favor. I don't know if it's within the last year or so, but it's been very helpful. So the way that it works right now is if 55% of student workers sign a union card, then you are automatically certified as a union. So in the past, what you had to do was get a certain amount of workers to sign, and then you could have a vote and you'd have to get everybody back and sign again. That doesn't happen anymore, which is a huge benefit to the union. And so what this basically looks like is if you are a student worker in one of these positions, so research assistant, academic assistant, general graduate assistant, or work learn, you sign a card, you put your name, you put a little bit of information. That list gets sent to the labor board once we're ready. And then UBC will also send a list of their student workers. So we'll say we had all of these RAs, research assistants, work learns sign. UBC will, okay, this is the list of all of the research assistants that we know of, and then the labor board will check the two. So UBC never sees the list, your supervisor never sees the list, the labor board is the one who's doing all the checking, and if the labor board checks all the names against each other that UBC and we send them, and it's 55%, then you're automatically in QPT278. So that's what the whole process really looks like.
All right. So why would a single union serve both, say, teaching assistants and student workers? So are they similar enough? Are their interests similar enough aligned that it would actually be beneficial and more productive to have a single union as opposed to have separate unions? Like we do have separate coupes for different things on campus.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think so. I mean, one of the there's three different positions, right? But the academic assistant position specifically, a lot of those were created during COVID to kind of reduce the amount of TA positions. So those are definitely positions that they are doing the same work as TAs. I would argue that the other two positions, work learns, graduate assistants, and research assistants, that's the way that you pay for a degree. So I hold both of those positions. I hold a TA position and an RA position, and that is where my funding comes from. So it makes sense that those two positions aren't going to be split between, because I'm a graduate student and that's where my time and energy goes, is into those two things. So I think it makes sense in the end to have everybody kind of under the same umbrella. It also means that we have some power about things that affect graduate students broadly. So, you know, things like tuition and like specifically the MSP fee. I'm an international student. I'm still paying my $75 a month for health insurance. And right now, every time the union has tried to bring that up in bargaining, saying, hey, this is unfair burden on the international students, the university can quite easily say, well, you don't represent all graduate students, so please don't bring up, you know, we can't argue about these issues that affect all graduate students. And so, you know, when you unionize all the graduate student positions, suddenly those things become more available to talk about. So that's, to me, what makes sense about having all those positions under the same local
union. Mm-hmm. Perfect. So it kind of segues into my next question about graduate students in general.
Yeah.
So why do graduate students need a union? So graduate students have a graduate student society. They pay a fee to the graduate student society. The graduate student society is supposed to reflect their concerns. So what would a union do for them that the graduate student society isn't doing?
Yeah, another great question. I think the big thing comes in terms of employment. So we represent workers to their employer, and the graduate student society represents graduate students to like the university wide. So like, I think they, and I don't know as much about the GSS as I know about the union, but it seems like they kind of do like wider issues. They hold events, social events, that kind of thing. We, you know, we have a contract with the university that outlines student worker positions, how much they get paid, what their benefits are. And so we kind of serve a different role in terms of actually covering employment things versus like these broader, like more general, graduate student issues. And so I think that's kind of where the difference lies. I actually don't know if the GSS has that sort of contract with the university, but you know, that is what the union provides, is a collective agreement that outlines all of these like sort of working conditions that I just don't think the GSS covers in the same way.
So okay, so how much would, so I'm a graduate student.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the unionization drive. I'm going to be unionized, and I'm wondering, so how much am I going to be paying in union fees?
Great question. So right now the union dues are 2%. Usually the way that and again, no promises, but often what is pretty commonplace when people join a union is that you sometimes don't start paying dues till you have your first pay increase. So, you know, I think when the TA union first joined in 1979, I think within the first few years, there was like an 11% pay increase, which is great. And usually like dues often won't kick in until then. It's also that kind of money goes back to the graduate students. So that money goes into like a strike fund. So if we ever go on strike, you know, you're still going to get paid. And so, yeah, it's 2% of a paycheck. And that's probably what it would start out as. And that might not even kick in until you have had your first like pay increase.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm curious about that strike fund, but we'll ask about it a bit later. One thing I encountered, when I was actually, unlike him, he's not a graduate student, but I was actually an undergraduate TA at one point,
mm-hmm.
and I was a member of QP 2278.
Yeah.
And like nobody actually seemed to care. Like none of the my colleagues seemed to care. They just, you know, it was a side job for a lot of undergraduates. There was just so many things going on in their life. This was just like another set of meetings and fees you had to pay, but it didn't really seem. Are you doing anything? What are you doing to change that sentiment, or have you encountered that sentiment at all?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's been a really interesting kind of offshoot of organizing on campus, is there's just a lot more talk about like what it means to be in the union, the fact that there is a union on campus. Often that's how I'll start conversations with people. I'll say, you know, hey, are you working as a TA? Often a lot of graduate students are doing that in conjunction with an RA work. I'll say, did you know you're in a union because of that? People, like, it's not uncommon for people to say, oh, I had no idea. And so I think in terms of organizing, because so much of what we do is just getting out and talking to students, we're just raising awareness, and people seem to care more once they just know that we exist, really. I'm not surprised that people weren't like super engaged, but I think it's really a personality thing. I mean, there's so many places to put your energy that some people are going to be more interested in activism work, and some people are going to say, okay, great, if I need the union, it's there, but I, you know, who knows? I think it is kind of, it's almost like insurance. Like it might be you might feel like, well, I've never used this before, but when you need it, it's really good that it's there. You know, if you have some sort of issue with your wage, like you definitely want to have somebody who can go and argue with the university on your behalf. So, I'm not surprised that the sentiment was a little bit, people just didn't know about it as much, but that's something we found through organizing, is that a lot more people just seem to care and really raise awareness about like activism in terms of labor on campus.
Yeah, it's it's nice to have someone in your corner.
Yeah.
Right? So you don't have to fight the fight that someone else is fighting for you.
I mean, that's really the point of the union, is to just like have a group that can go and argue so that you don't have to, you know, get into like a personal dispute with your supervisor. But also, like, these are massive university-wide things that can come up if you have a wage issue. It's like, who are you supposed, like, are you alone, you know, on top of all your graduate work, are supposed to go and fight for your wage loss or whatever? You know, so that's really the point of the union. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Should I submit my thesis or should I fight for a pay increase this week?
Yeah.
I do want to ask about Organize UBC's timeline. So you said you have to submit your list, your cards, and then UBC has to submit a list. So what is the timeline for that? What's the timeline for your submission? What's the timeline for UBC's submission?
Yeah, great. So I guess that is a part of that I left out. So cards expire after 6 months. So if you signed a card, we opened cards in September, early September. So if you kind of signed a card in early September, that's going to expire 6 months later. You can always re-sign. That's not a barrier. And so we kind of were, you know, we're looking at this on a 6 month timeline, but the QP plans on being here until we have those groups unionized. So in terms of a timeline, I actually, when you submit cards.
So you said 6 months. So are you tentatively looking to have this in by March?
That's the goal. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, like we're going to stick around. This is the large, like, what we've been saying, what we think is that it's one of the largest unionizing drives in Western Canada right now. So, like, you know, it's WestJet was unionized recently, and that took 3 years, and that was across the nation. But we don't expect it to take 3 years. But we also wouldn't be surprised if it goes a little bit past 6 months, and we have to reassign some of those people at the beginning. I mean, the good news is everybody who signed on the first day is super eager, so it's easy to just send them an email and say, "Hey, do you mind just signing again?" I don't know how long it takes to actually like submit everything to the labor board and to get that information back, but I would expect that, you know, it's a few weeks. I know SFU recently did that, so. Or I guess they didn't actually even recently. It was a few years ago. But I don't think it takes like past a few months.
And it should be pretty easy to find the people who signed the cards that they expired. They're on this 1,000-acre campus, right?
The good thing is most people put their email on there, so we can just send them another email. But yeah.
That's way easier than my idea.
That has been the trouble, really, is just getting in contact with people. Like, UBC is huge. There are a bunch of different buildings. Graduate students don't necessarily cluster in one place. And so that really has been the biggest, like, you know, barrier to overcome, is just like finding where people are and talking to them. Once we talk to people, it's been really positive, but it's just finding them.
Understandably so. We are going to take another quick break, but do stay tuned. We're going to get Gracie's thoughts on Doug Ford and more after this break.
Hello.
Hey, I'm just going to come out and say it. I've been meaning to tell you this. I know that we've only been hanging out for some time, but you make my world so much brighter, and I have a really big crush on you, and I think I might be in love with you.
Hey, sorry, the call keeps cutting out. Can you say that one more time?
Never mind. I'll see you in class tomorrow.
Make sure no voices get left unheard while they are talking about something they love. CITR is a place where people in the community can come together to talk about things they are passionate about. This year, CITR is raising money for a radio transmitter, which CITR cannot survive without because it literally transmits the radio. No pun intended. Help us make sure voices are being heard on the air by donating to CITR from February 2nd to 10th during the week of Fun Drive, and in return you will receive a cool prize and will also help community radio survive and thrive.
The Aboriginal Front Door Society is a culturally safe, peer-designed, non-judgmental place for Aboriginal peoples, their friends and their family in the downtown Eastside. It's an accessible space where Aboriginal folks can experience, learn and participate in traditional Aboriginal culture, teachings and ceremonies as part of their healing journey through life. Right now, they're accepting donations of food and warm clothing, which are needed more than ever as residents of the downtown Eastside face the challenges of COVID-19 and winter weather. If you're able to help, you can drop your donation off at 384 Main Street on weekdays between 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. That is 384 Main Street. To learn more about the Aboriginal Front Door Society and other ways that you can support their work, please visit abfrontdoor.org.
Hello. I'm Addy Wolf, and this is my new single, Mastery. You can go check the music video on my website, addywolf.com. That's addewolf.com. Bless.
Do you want to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder, because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
If you are just tuning in, you're listening to the Aman and Akil Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We are continuing our conversation with Gracie Buchholz, Vice President of CUPE 2278, an education workers union here at UBC.
So as we said before, we're going to be talking about a couple of miscellaneous things.
Doug Ford.
Among them.
Okay.
So when we were undergrads at UBC, I remember a physics professor saying, and this was years and years ago, back when we were youthful young young fellas. I remember a physics professor from the US saying, quote, TAing should be considered a course, not a job. There should be no union to try and reduce their hours, unquote. And that, you know, she saw this as a cultural difference. The professor's name is Jenny Hoffman. She was here for less than a year. She moved back to Harvard. But what's your gut reaction to that?
Interesting. I mean, my initial reaction was actually like, oh, I mean, you know, teaching is something that you have to learn for sure. And I think a lot of TAs are thrown on the job. So, I you know, I guess you can argue that. But this idea that you don't need a union and to reduce hours. That's kind of funny that she equated the two, that being in a union would mean that we're trying to cut people's hours, which really is not what we're doing. Like, we expect people to work, that you're in the job, but really it's about getting some defined boundaries on what work is. So, you know, you don't want people who are being forced to come in and mark every single weekend. So that's kind of funny to me that those two things are the same, because to me that's not what a union is about at all. It's not like trying to get people off scot-free of like participating.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, being anti-stealing your weekend is probably something a lot of people can resonate with.
Yeah.
do you think that like that kind of sentiment would fly now? Like, so do the professors you work with feel this way, or how do the professors think about this? Like, what is their reaction?
Yeah, you know, I won't try to speak for professors, but I'll talk about, you know, what I've kind of seen. So, and on a personal experience, my supervisor has done quite a bit of work on the national level trying to get grant increases. So a lot of people are funded through NSERC or CERC grants. Those have not increased since 2007. It's a long time since 2007. A lot has changed. It would be great to get those increased. So I think there is kind of a sentiment among supervisors right now where there needs to be top-down approach. So, you know, if you want to increase the research assistant wages, it'd be great if the government could help out with that. So there needs to be some work done on that level. And there also needs to be work done at the university level, which is what we're trying to do. So that's what I see from professors, is like a general, they know that something is wrong. They know that people are not really able to live, especially in a city like Vancouver, on the wages that they're making, and they're trying to help. I think the one pushback that you sometimes hear is that people say, well, I won't be able to hire as many students. You know, I this will not allow me to like really give people those opportunities. And, you know, that's true. Maybe. I think people always find a way. But it's also like, wouldn't you want the people who are in your lab to be able to live off of what you're paying them, even if that means for a few years you maybe can't have as many students? So generally, it's been really positive. We've had people, professors, tweet in support of us, which has been great. It's a little bit of a sticky line because they're technically like in the managerial position, but any support is really welcome. And so far, it's been very positive from supervisors.
Yeah, I remember me and Akil actually talked a lot about that particular comment. Like, that was a while ago. Specifically that NSERC thing that Michael, we mentioned earlier, he actually was on the had raised that with me that the NSERC funding hasn't been increased in ages. So now, in Ontario, there's this whole situation with Doug Ford, you know, forcing people back to work or attempting to, and then revoking his own bills and stuff. So 55,000 QP workers went on strike in Ontario. What was your reaction to that at the time? Have you thought about ever walking off the job yourself? And what would that look like for education workers here at UBC?
Yeah, so TAs have striked at UBC before. I believe the last time was in like 2011 or 12, maybe. I'm not sure about that date specifically. And what that looks like is, I assume that at that time, I think the issue was wages. And it looks like, you know, you're not holding your tutorials. You're not going to work in that capacity. And I think that did end with an agreement with the university to increase wages. So if you were to strike in your teaching capability, it means you're not holding tutorial. And then if we were ever to strike as the research assistant, which I always like to remind people that striking is a democratic process. You will never have the union come down to you and say, okay, you're striking now, you don't get to go to work anymore. It is a vote, and it is meant to be democratic. And so if we ever were to go on strike, that would be like a group decision. And we also, I think a lot of people worry, well, you know, I work in a lab where I'm taking care of animals, or I have this very time-sensitive thing. I can't just leave the lab. Like, I can't be on strike. You know, there are always exceptions that we grant people, especially in terms of like lab work and stuff like that, if something was really dire. But, you know, the goal is not to form a union so then we can strike. The goal is to form a union and then work with the university on this, on a collective agreement. Striking is towards the end. My initial reaction when I saw what was going on in Ontario was, you know, my partner's family, his mom and his sister are both in education, and watching what they had to go through during COVID was really tough. Like, you know, it was really hard to teach online. Students, when they came back, were falling behind. They still talk about how students are not where they were in the past. And so, you know, I think, you know, solidarity with the people who are striking there, and hopefully the teaching conditions can get better. I mean, I don't know if I know all of the details, but when I hear like teaching people who are teaching are going on strike, especially after COVID, I can't say I'm like that surprised.
So could you talk about like about the mechanics, like for research assistants in particular? You mentioned lab work, but it's also like research, you often like even like, you know, thinking about things, especially, you know, in the math department or something. I'm just, you know, curious again, how does that work? And also, you know, you mentioned also the strike fund. To what degree does a strike fund is able to support, you know, these kind of strikes?
Yeah. How would it work in terms of research? Well, I mean, the positions are, it's like research assistant, academic assistant, graduate assistant. So some of those positions are basically like work for professors. So, you know, like maybe you're building a website for somebody, or you're helping develop course content. Again, if you were to strike, it would mean that you weren't working on that. If you were doing research that was like a bit more cerebral, should we say, like you're sitting around just thinking all day, I guess you know maybe you wouldn't come into the office or be turning in things for a little while. And I don't know what the specific numbers are, but I know that our strike fund is like very large. Like I haven't looked into it because I don't think we're really thinking about striking anytime soon, but that is where like a significant amount, we have a significant amount of money set aside for that, so when the time came, people would still be like able to pay rent and stuff.
And I imagine like probably the maximum leverage is though with the teaching, right? Like,
yeah.
Because if the research pauses for a bit, like the university would be kind of okay with that.
Yeah.
Right? But the teaching is really, would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely something that I think when the time comes, we'll talk about what that would look like. I mean, I think it wouldn't be completely out of the realm of possibility that people would maybe strike in their teaching capacity, you know, saying like, okay, you know, I'm a research assistant, but this is really what's going to make things change. I've also said, you know, there was a period of time where I was working in the field, and it was really me and my supervisor out hiking around, collecting samples, setting up experiments. You know, if the university goes on strike at that time, I'm not going to sit down in the field and refuse to work. So it's very situation dependent. And I think when the time comes, like, it'll be something that's talked about. But I don't expect a strike to be one of the first things we do. I think it should be fine.
You don't plan on going 0 to 100 right away.
Yeah, I mean, striking really is a last resort. Like, the goal is to work with the university to build a contract that makes sense for everybody involved. And, like, that's what we want to do. I think an additional thing that's been really positive is this increase of activism on campus, but that doesn't mean that we want to strike.
So from UBC side, have you felt any pushback on the unionization drive? Is there any anti-union stuff going around?
Not really. I mean, you know, we're not an Amazon warehouse, so like that's, you know, we haven't seen any like weird graphics of like little dogs being like, we hate unions. I think the statement that UBC tends to put out is that they respect students' right to organize, and they just kind of that line just keeps showing up, which is great. You know, I have no idea what they really think about it. It seems a little bit of a throwaway line, but it's much better than having anti-union work. So far, there hasn't really been anything. As I said, you know, I feel very lucky in that the biggest issue is just reaching people. It hasn't been, you know, really combative workers or people who don't want to join or issues with supervisors. It really is like just the reach that we have and the capacity to get out and talk to people has been a barrier, but it hasn't been very, yeah, it hasn't been very negative from the university at all.
Yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to share about, you know, Organize UBC or CUPE 227A or something some part of the story that we're missing here?
It's a good question. You know, I think something that I've just really enjoyed seeing is this increase of interest in the union. So when I joined, I had I did not have to fight for my DR position, my department rep. Like, nobody else really wanted it. but, you know, since I've taken that position, people know what it is now, and people will come and say, like, this is great. I'm so glad we're working on this. Like, there seems to be a lot of interest in it, and that's been awesome to see because I think, you know, this is, at the end of the day, like, this is a group about students. It's run by students for students. And so it's really awesome that people just are more involved in it. And, you know, we're always looking for people who are interested in helping out you know, various departments. Medicine has been a big one right now. So if people have connections, that's something we always like to chat with them about. And in general, I always like to say that I got involved because I want to leave UBC better than I found it. You know, I think that there are these big issues that I would love to be able to sit at the table with the university and talk about. And I'm hoping that with this drive, that will kind of be possible.
Yeah. So you mentioned medicine. So this would be like people studying to be doctors or?
From what I understand, like, there are people who hold these research assistant, graduate assistant, and academic assistant positions that are a part of the Faculty of Medicine. So there's a lot of different groups within that. You have people who do like bioinformatics work or genomics work, and they work in a hospital, but they're not working to get their MD. They have these like these positions that we're hoping to unionize, and they just happen to work in like a hospital lab instead of a university campus lab.
I see. So if they worked on a university campus lab, then?
I mean, all of these positions are research assistant positions. It just happens that some of the research assistant positions that we're hoping to unionize aren't on campus. They're in the hospital. So they're still like valid to sign a card. And we're trying to reach them. It just is harder because they're not like at UBC. They're at BGH or somewhere else.
But they are enrolled as UBC students.
Yeah, exactly. And they're studying, you know, maybe they're doing their graduate degree on like medical research or something like that. And so they're holding these positions, but not exactly studying to be a medical doctor.
I see. Interesting.
Although maybe there are people who are studying to be medical doctors who hold these positions. I don't know the specifics. I just know that they're a harder group to reach because they're so spread out and not, you know, people are already spread out at UBC and now we have people who are spread out through Vancouver. So.
Yeah, yeah. So just like the reach problem seems to be the biggest.
Yeah.
Biggest obstacle. And you don't have any like sort of way from the, like, I remember when I was an undergraduate TA, we got an email to attend this information session about the union, right? And that email was actually sent by the Department of Mathematics. So I was just wondering, how does that work? Like, is it not possible that to use the the contact list of the university to contact these people?
Yeah, so we have a little bit. So that's actually one of the roles of the vice president is to run the department rep network and to do the union orientations. So I just finished those up this January. The thing is that the department needs to let us know who needs them. So not everybody, you know, gets a new round of TAs. So we are a little bit reliant on them. But for the most part, they do get back to us. And that is always a slide I include to say, hey, we're organizing. If you're interested, let me know. I think a lot of people are really busy in graduate school, understandably, and are like, this is great, I'll sign my card, but like I can't give you any time during the week. Yeah.
So these the emails that they give you are only people who are currently in jobs covered by the union.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be in prospective people. They wouldn't give you the emails for prospective people. And that's, I guess, the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, often a lot of people will hold both roles. So, you know, like I did my TA orientation and then I still had my RA position, so I could have signed a card. And that has like resulted in some people getting involved. But, you know, we also want to do it the right way. We want to be professional. Like, we don't want to just grab people's emails from the department. If they give them to us, awesome. And so, yeah, we definitely like exercise some of those routes. I mean, really what we found is that people know people on campus, and often they know people who aren't in their department. So that's been the best way, is to say, you know, you're like literally...
Except in Salder.
Yeah. I'm really trying. You know, you go to a party and you say like, hey, you know, you're in chemistry and I'm in bio. Like, have you heard about the unionizing drive? And people will be like, oh, you know, maybe I have heard about that, and like, oh, okay, do you mind mentioning it to your friends? And like, that's honestly has been really successful so far, and so we're just kind of trying to keep that going, as well as pulling on the department rep network, and the direct snaction has been pretty successful as well, just literally going to labs and talking to people.
Yeah, cool. We're almost at time.
I did want to ask if you had if there's something you wanted to say to graduate students, to, you know, research assistants, academic assistants, and anyone else out there who is a potential union, someone you want to sign up, someone you want to get to sign a card?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, if you've ever had a position as a TA, there was a lot of benefits that came with that. If you had issues with your wages, if you had issues with your supervisor, we have an advocate who can go to the university to bat for you. If there's a term where you are not a teaching assistant, you're a research assistant, all of that goes away. And that's quite a safety net to lose. And for the people who are saying, you know, well, my stipend is great, I can pay my rent totally fine, things are good, you know, I don't want to join a union and have a decrease or something like that, you know, I really say, first is that we're trying to bring the floor up, not the ceiling down. So we're trying to make things better for the people who have no guarantee in funding or something like that. We're really not trying to make it completely standardized. It's really to bring it up. And also, you don't know how long that is. So maybe you've got a great supervisor right now and things are going well, but maybe the department head changes and they slash all the funding. And so, you know, isn't it, I would rather have a safety net knowing that there's a group that I can go talk to if something like that happens. So, you know, I think that's where we tend to get some questions. Is like, why, you know, why is this good for me? Which is a great question. And that tends to be the answer, is then you can kind of access those resources and you don't have to do it alone.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, that brings us to an end of today's show. The music you heard in the intro was Song of the Mies by Sarah Pratt. And you can listen to more of her on SoundCloud at Leisure Noise.
And I'd like to thank Gracie Buchholz for being here on the pilot episode of the Armand and Akhil show on CITR 101.9 FM.
Yeah.
Happy to do it.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
You see garbage, something broken. 2 years hoping I can fix it. Flip it open. When you wear it, let me know. Then call me on the telephone. I know I don't pick up, but leave a message, though. You're welcome over. Oh yeah.